Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we will not be doing a tight 10 minutes on Adolescence, the extremely watchable Netflix limited series that you should all be checking out. No, instead, we'll be talking about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meal at a Houston restaurant you may want to try. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival. Michael Fulmer, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Always a pleasure to be here. I thought this was a White Lotus podcast. I'm confused.
I mean, I could do 10 minutes on The Pit. I could do 5 minutes on how terrible this White Lotus season has been. But mostly I just want to talk about how incredible the first like half an hour of episode one of Adolescence is, and then how incredible all of episode three is. But Daddy, that's not this podcast. That's a different podcast. So let's talk about a little bit of the news of the week. Topic number one, Camaraderie, the eagerly anticipated new restaurant from Chef Sean Gall, is opening this Wednesday, March 26th. I think Sean's doing something kind of interesting. Instead of just a conventional, he's not doing a tasting menu and he's not doing an a la carte menu. He's doing both, sort of. You have your choice when you go to Camaraderie of either a $75 three-course prefix that has shared appetizers, your choice of about five entrees, and then dessert, or there's an a la carte menu in the lounge area that's sort of priced from, you know, in the 20s to the 40s kind of a situation. Now, we know Sean, he was the executive pastry chef for Good Night Hospitality for several years. He won a Culture Map Tastemaker Award in 2023 for his work there. He's also worked at a ton of great Michelin-starred restaurants, including L2O in Chicago when it had two stars and Cezanne in San Francisco when it had three. Now, I'll say this. I'm going to have Sean on the show next week to talk about Camaraderie in more depth. But I did want to note that it was open. And so I've talked long enough. Michael, what do you think? What are your expectations for Camaraderie?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited by the format. You know, I think there's been I know tasting menus have kind of overwhelmed. They kind of overwhelmed the community for a while there. And prices were getting out of control. And I like a good tasting menu. But, you know, it can get a bit overwrought in terms of what it does and in the pricing. And this is something that's very accessible. You know, it's under $100. It's a very tight menu. You know, there's not huge amounts of choices. So it seems very personal, you know. And if you look at their website and you talk about, you know, he talks about what their values are, you know, and that you see a lot of restaurants, you know, that when they open, there's a lot of rhetoric on this, but this guy has an incredible resume. And, you know, if anybody's going to, you know, walk the walk, who talks the talk, it's going to be him, you know. And so the menu looks interesting. And just like I said, just the background of who he is and what he brings to the table shows a lot of promise.
Yeah, no, I think that's all well said. You know, of the chefs in Houston, I mean, none may have better credentials or have worked at more prominent Michelin-starred restaurants than Sean has. So automatically I'm intrigued. And I'm excited about this prefix format. I mean, I got a very early preview of it at an investor like recruiting dinner that he did a couple of years ago. I think even before he had a lease, he was still shopping for spaces at that point. And so, you know, he's been marinating on this idea for a long time. And so it's exciting to see it come to fruition. And, you know, they sent out some food photos. We published some in Culture Map. There were a couple more in the Chronicle. But they're that Violasso Buco with the bucatini pasta that's kind of like shaped into like a dome. Like, I don't quite know how to describe it. It's on the Chronicle.
I saw a picture of it.
It looks freaking incredible.
Yeah.
And he's also put together an incredible team to help him out with this. General manager Jillian worked at March for a long time. Christine Wynn worked at Bad News and Nancy Sussel. She's the bar manager. I know there's some other folks working front of house there. So, you know, I really feel like this is one of those early contenders. Like, we'll be, you know, when we meet again in December to talk about our favorite new restaurants of the year, I fully expect that Camaraderie will be prominently featured in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's ambitious, but it's not, it doesn't feel like it's really pushing the huge envelope, and it's like on the fringe. It looks very accessible. I love the location in the Heights. You know, we know real estate prices in Heights and Montrose have gotten kind of crazy, but you know, it looks like he's found a space, and you know, that community, I think this fits really well for that. I think it's going to be destination worthy as well. You know, this isn't just going to be part of the community of the Heights, which I'm sure he wants to be, but this is going to be someplace people will travel to, and, you know, not just the hardcore foodies who have to be at the first place, you know, the first week or the first month. It has a lot of promise for longevity with the staff, with the intentions that they put forward. The menu, you know, like I said, it looks exciting without being, you know, bizarre. And that's a fine line.
Yeah, so don't knock those hardcore foodies. That's who listens to the show, by the way, and follows us on Instagram buys tickets to your festival and all that stuff.
And I'm one of them. I'm one of them. But in the end, like, a restaurant is going to ultimately endure by having, you know, basically the general public embrace it, you know?
No, I think that's right. And I think over the past couple of years, we have seen, you know, for a long time in the Heights, it was like, if it's not family friendly or cultivare, you're basically out of luck. But in the last couple of years, right, we've seen June with their kind of eclectic, you know, Asian, Latin fusion, all those flavors do very well. You know, Basso's done very well, not in a, you know, definitely not a family friendly kind of restaurant, like a very ambitious restaurant, you know, Squabble too. And so, you know, the camaraderie is kind of a, you know, the latest example of that, something a little more ambitious, a little more chef driven in the Heights. I'm very much here for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had dinner at June last month on a Monday, and it was just about full, well into the evening. And that speaks well to the community really supporting that, you know, so this really has all the markings of a successful operation.
Absolutely. All right. Let's move on to topic number two. Speaking of new things opening in the Heights, Asa Hanrahan, the general manager, longtime general manager of the downtown location of Flying Saucer and the beer director for a whole bunch of locations of the Flying Saucer, is opening The Kid, a new cocktail bar in the former Flying Fish space at 19th Street and Durham Drive. Since it's part of that same company that includes the Flying Saucer, it will also serve hamburgers from Rodeo Goat, the Dallas-based burger spot that has a location in Edo. Michael, again, I don't know that there's a whole ton to say about The Kid, but just, you know, based on what I wrote and kind of what you've heard, what do you think about this idea of a kind of a casual cocktail bar with really great burgers opening up in the Heights?
Well, you know, that part of the Heights over Shepherd and Durham, you know, this looks like it could be a great, you know, neighborhood bar, you know, and they could, how they want to choose to elevate and price it will be, you know, of course, an interesting, you know, we'll see how that's revealed. But I actually drove by it yesterday and saw them working on it. You know, I guess it's an old gas station that was, you know, converted to Flying Fish. You and I had a meal there, actually, as I recall, back in the day. So, you know, this is a company that's well capitalized. You know, they're not going to be, I think, hanging on every thread to be successful the first week out. And that'll give them time to grow. Obviously, they're playing, you know, they're doing a play on Rodeo Goat by calling it The Kid. Because when I first saw, you know, a bar is being called The Kid, I was like, what a strange name. And then I saw who was behind that. You know, despite my predisposition to not really like interlopers, you know, and out of town, you know, restaurateurs who come into Houston, you know, that's just my own thing. You know, Rodeo Goats makes a really damn good burgers, and I go there every now and then. And the idea of having something, you know, in the bar, because people want to eat when they're in a bar, you know, that conflates really nicely too. So I think it's a good space, and you know, it's really up to them whether it's successful or not. But I think it's good timing.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And I think, you know, I was kind of thinking about, you know, Hubcap Grill was on 19th Street for many years. It closed a couple of years ago. And there really isn't that, like, one, you know, kind of local burger spot in the Heights. I mean, certainly there's a Hop Dottie near there, but it's not quite the same. It's not quite the same vibe. It's, you know, definitely a restaurant, not really a bar.
Yeah, burger joint's not too far away either.
Yeah, the Burger Joint's right around the corner, but they only have beer and wine. So like the idea of being like a cocktail bar that also will serve you a great burger, I think that's compelling. You know, and we should say, I mean, the Flying Saucer, you know, the ups and downs of downtown dining, the Flying Saucer has endured and built a real following, and Ace deserves some of the credit for that, I think. And you know, I'm with you. I mean, I think Rodeo Grill makes a great burger. It's very close to where I live, so it's in that kind of option for either a casual dinner or you know, even more frequently as a delivery option for me. So I'm intrigued by this, and having talked to him about how it's been his aspiration to own a bar and how he had his eye on that property even before it became a Flying Fish, I know he's really excited about it. I know he's gonna put his best effort in on that. And so yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to go to the kid, and I think it's kind of a nice going to be kind of a nice alternative to some of the like the bigger, louder, younger oriented patio bars on 20th Street. I think it's going to pair very nicely with them.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting, and the people who live in this area will firmly attest to it, that you know, the construction that they did on Shepherd and Durham was just it was brutal. You know, going down to one lane, it was just like a parking lot, and it's basically done. The roads are really in really good shape, and it, you know, not having construction going on in a space, that's the kind of thing that can kill a restaurant or bar. You know, I've worked at places that happened to, and it's all clean and accessible, and once again, that sets them up for success.
Absolutely. All right. Topic number three. We're gonna spend a little time on this because this is, you know, one of the guiding motivations for starting the show. I can't believe I'm saying this. 8 years ago was that we would bring online the conversations that we were having offline, and I know both of us are kind of deep into the speculating about Texas Monthly's new list of the top 50 barbecue joints in the state. It is coming out in May. It looks like it is pretty well done, or at least mostly done. I know Daniel Vaughn, their barbecue editor, was just on a family vacation to Europe, so that leads me to think that the work is done. So let the speculation begin. And towards that end, I drove out to Port Neches, Texas, this weekend to try Redbird Barbecue. I had never been to Port Neches. It is near Port Arthur, another city I had never been to. Port Arthur is on the coast near Beaumont. But you know, the guy out there, he worked for Fejus Barbecue here in Houston. He went up to Goldie's Barbecue in Fort Worth, which was the number one on the last Texas Monthly list 4 years ago in 2021. So, Michael, I say all that to say to you, talk to me a little bit about Redbird Barbecue and why this restaurant is kind of, there's a lot of buzz. Like the people expect that this restaurant is probably going to be ranked in the top 10 on the Texas Monthly list when it comes out in May. So talk to me about Redbird and why are people so excited about this barbecue restaurant as opposed to so many hundreds and hundreds of other barbecue restaurants?
Well, first off, like the East Texas area and Southeast Texas was really, kind of almost a dead zone for quality. Certainly, craft barbecue and the Aaron Franklin Revolution had not, moved into that area. And there were some old, Patillo's and all these old places. They're institutions to be sure, but man, there's a lot of bad barbecue, I gotta say, out there. And I've tried a lot of it, if not most of it. And so there was like there's this it was kind of a void of like somebody who could really bring something of real quality on a consistent basis. And actually, the first time I had Redbird was actually at my festival. My partner with that, Chris Reed, had gone out there and was just, he loved it. And I was really impressed what they had. And so I have been out there several times. And in fact, I've been out there twice in the last couple of months. And both my experiences were just, I mean, it was like, the head turns, the eyes kind of turn up, the mouth opens, and you're just kind of agog and trying to articulate like how incredible what you've just had is. And this isn't something that's like he's not bringing in crazy different proteins or reinventing what the basic trinity is. He's just executing at a very high level. Now, he brings his family heritage in there. His dad makes the fresh pita bread every day, and it puts his personal stamp on it. But what he does with brisket, the moist and the lean, the ribs have that perfect tensile bite to it. and the flavor, it's just, it's all there. You know, they're making the sausage in house. I've had the pleasure of touring in the back, and they've got a really large prep area, and boy, they use it. And he's just got a great team, and he's a great leader, obviously, because I've had multiple experiences, and they've been, as you might, attest to, just fantastic.
Yeah, no, we should say that the pitmaster's name, the owner's name is Amir Jalali, I think. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Apologies to Amir if I screwed that up. But yeah, there is that little bit of the Persian heritage. He's making the beef coupe de sausage with the fresh pita and the tomato and cucumber salad that goes along with that. Just really outstanding. As you said, the brisket was spot on in terms of its seasoning and its texture and its smoke level. You know, I had the pork ribs. They were doing them with a little hot honey. I'm a sucker for a sweet and spicy pork rib.
So yeah, it's great.
Those were really excellent. And you know, I sent you a picture. I got in line. I sent you a picture. The line was out the door, and you went, no, their line management is good. And I will say, I got, there were probably, 40, 50 people in front of me when they opened at 11 o'clock on Saturday. And I was sitting down to eat my lunch by noon. It can feel like a small thing, but that kind of respect for people's time is like one of the ways that barbecue restaurants show that they care about service. And I really appreciated it. And it wasn't that they were being brusque, right? Like everyone, every time someone got up to the counter, Amir would look at them and go, oh, where are you coming from today? Or how'd you hear about us? He'd sort of engage them in that, like, kind of 2 to 3 minute chit chat while he was preparing their order. And I thought that hospitality was there. And, his father was there kind of working the dining room, talking to people. It's an impressive place. And I understand why you told me I had to go there. I understand why the guys behind Tales from the Pits, Brian and Andrew, are so hyped about that place. I'm glad that I went. I'm glad that I drove 100 miles one way on a Saturday to eat barbecue. But, then it comes back. It's like, well, all right, now you got to rank these places, right? And I'm not as barbecue obsessed as you are, but I've been to places. I mean, we've been to Burnt Bean Company together. I've been to Cadillac in Dallas within the last 6 months or so. Obviously, we have Truth here in Houston that I think is really excellent. I've been out to Bar A in Montgomery, which is another place that's on the Texas Monthly radar. And, I don't envy Daniel Vaughn and the team at Texas Monthly, because I don't really know. I got DMs from people. Is it better than Truth? Is it better than this? Is it better than that? It's like, it's just excellent. I didn't have to think about it too closely to be like, well, it's not as good as this, or it's better than that, or it's whatever. It's great. And if you love barbecue, you should go there. But if it's better or worse than any of these other places, like I don't even really know how to rank them.
Yeah. What separates, that the top echelon now, which used to be like maybe a 5 or 6, it moved to about 10 or 15. It's now, you could easily, there's 20 to 25 places that what separates them is just so minute, because they're all so good at what they're executing at and the commitment to what they're doing. So many places like making their own sausage, they're all sourcing high quality beef and they're executing at a high level. When I went to Dane's and had a similar experience that I had at Redbird, it was just like, oh my God, this is just so good, and the explosion we've seen in the Fort Worth area of just incredible quality is exciting. And, there's a lot of talk about Austin hitting a plateau on barbecue. Well, it hasn't, Interstellar was a great example of that, like the northern area that just was kind of in some ways underserved with a high quality experience. And Interstellar, of course, just has lines out the door every day. And they're, Austin's not getting smaller. It's getting bigger. And their taste and for quality barbecue is not going to go down anytime soon. Also, their willingness to wait in line. I've talked about line culture, and in Austin, it's a very kind of almost prevalent thing that certainly it transcends, barbecue. It's a lot of it's out there. And people are willing to wait for a good quality experience. And there's a lot of it there.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, Birdie's arguably maybe the best restaurant in Austin is counter service. And you have to stand in line and wait for it. And that would That would never fly in Houston, but it's just part of the culture in Austin.
It is. It is. And we're not lacking for anything here. And there's certainly, you know, when you look at what is in the south area of Houston, when you look at kind of Missouri City, Clear Lake, Galveston, there are a few places, but, you know, there's a lot of room for growth there also for a high quality experience. And, you know, that speaks to well to what, you know, we'll see for growth in Houston. Still, you know, incredible diversity and quality that we have here. And, you know, those are the city barbecues, as Daniel Vaughn would kind of put it, like the urban areas. But we're starting to see smaller places, too, you know, really still kind of sustain themselves in places that normally were completely driven by, you know, the economics, meaning it just had to be, you had to have your price as low as possible. Now, barbecue is not an inexpensive experience, you know, and I mean, I think we all kind of remember when brisket went over $20 a pound, like it was this kind of, whoa, over $20.
Yeah. Let me just say Redbird, it was $36 a pound.
Yeah.
And they price it by the half pound. So you see that 18 and you're like, oh, it's a deal. And it's like, no, it's the same price as it is in all of these other places, in Houston. I will say, you know, on that, you know, big town or big city, small town divide. I do not consider Port Neches to be part of Houston. That is you get much beyond the Grand Parkway. And we start losing, you know, like up Tomball, you know, somewhere between Tomball and Barre, if you're going north, you know, Tejas, yes, Barre kind of pushing it. Port Neches is definitely not Houston, right? You know, 100 miles from my house near downtown. So not Houston.
No, not Houston, but like, is it destination worthy? 100%. You know, the number of people who travel to Louisiana, whether they're like on their way to New Orleans or whether it's a gambling excursion or to go hunting, you know what, if you want to stop and get great barbecue, there's a place you can do it. You know, of course, you know, like 1701 has really, you know, they established themselves several years ago, but you know, Redbird is now in that conversation.
We should note that the Houston Barbecue Festival is making its triumphant return on Sunday, April 6th. That is your big event. So tell people what they can expect at this year's Houston Barbecue Festival.
Well, this is something that really Chris Reed and I put together to highlight and shine a light on all these incredible, hardworking people in the world of barbecue, particularly in Houston. We're really Houston focused. We do have some friends who come from out of town, and we're really excited to have Burnt Bean this year. We're really excited to have Redbird back. But as you know, Houston is so spread out, and the idea of like, how can I try all these different barbecue places? Well, you know what? For the price of one ticket, you can come and try, you know, a vast majority of what high quality barbecue, you know, is offered in the Houston area. And, you know, the diversity is all there too. You know, we've got, you know, Korean barbecue is there, you know, a great Latino barbecue, La Cruda, is there. My always concern about going to like festivals, particularly barbecue ones, is that you get kind of stuck with like, do I really want to try 15 pieces of brisket? Well, there are people who do want to do that, but there's a real diversity into what is offered there. And the great thing I love about our festival is that you pay one ticket, you know, you pay for it beforehand, you show up, and you don't have to open your wallet ever again unless you want to buy a t-shirt or drink, and you can have as many samples as much as you want. We put it up at the Humble Civic Center specifically to make it accessible to people, to families, to keep the price down. The parking is free. Right now, the general admission ticket is $60. That's going to go up to $80 shortly. We have a few VIP tickets left. That's at 120. That's going about to go up. That's about to sell out. That gets you in an hour earlier. So I hope we'll see a lot of you back there on April 6th.
No, that all sounds great. So how can people get tickets? What's the website for the Houston Barbecue Festival?
So tickets are going to be available online, not at the door. And that's at houbbq.com. That's houbbq.com.
All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Michael, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Anam. This is the new fine dining Vietnamese restaurant from MF Sushi chef owner Chris Kinjo in Autry Park. We know Chris both from MF Sushi and, of course, MF Lobster and Seafood, his other restaurant in Autry Park that opened last year. You know, there's been some quiet buzz building around on him, but I didn't really have much in the way of expectations when we went there. So let me just ask you, what were some of your first impressions when we walked in the space? What did you think about Onum?
It's very ornate, you know, the bar is not, it's not just like a slab or a piece of metal. Like there's this incredible etchings into it. You know, it's very white, you know, so it's very bright with a very high ceiling. So there's a certain drama to that. The booths are, I sat in the booth briefly before we moved to a table. We're really comfortable. So like really kind of ideal either for a communal or for sort of an intimate, you know, sort of date night, tete-a-tete kind of experience. You know, so that was the look and feel. I got to say this, we were a known quantity, but the service we had was really top notch, you know, in terms of always being there for what we needed, never being overly intrusive, you know, kind of really kind of knowing their menu and a willingness to suggest things. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, we didn't make the reservation under my name. Actually, a friend of ours made it, but I've known Chris since MS Sushi first opened in like 2012, and it didn't take him long to see us sitting there and to you know, make an appropriate fuss over our presence. Yeah, you know, I'm with you on the design. I mean, I thought, you know, high ceilings, this bright white. It's the name is the, you know, the French colonial name for Vietnam. So it kind of harkens back. It's got kind of a retro, you know, turn of the century look to it. You know, it's got really pretty tile floors. It's a very attractive restaurant. And that, you know, that's consistent with what Chris Kinjo did at the MF Sushi in the Museum District and also at MF Lobster and Seafood. So, you know, no surprise there. What are your thoughts on the menu? Because, you know, it's got a whole long series of small plates organized by sort of protein. And then on top of that, you have a few sort of shareable entrees.
Well, it almost really kind of begs you to interact with your server because one, the menu's not online. Okay. There's no like, oh, let's see. Do I want to go here? What do they have? Or what do I want to order? That kind of thing, which I love to do. I like, you know, research places before I go there. And then two, like you said, it's not entirely clear as to what kind of portion size you're getting. And so it really kind of forces you to interact with the server. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because their servers are well-trained and they understand the menu. Like I thought it was really good for shareable items, the spring rolls. We had just this wonderful pork jowl, you know, essentially guanciale wrapped, you know, that was perfectly rendered, wrapped in a lettuce leaf. So it had just a great crunch and a nice unctuousness to it. There were several soups on there that we did not try because we were sharing things and soup is a rather problematic thing to share. So I'm eager to go back and kind of explore that avenue of the menu. You know, the idea of the French Vietnamese combination, you know, something that we saw when Le Colonial opened several years ago. And I was like, I wasn't sure that Houston would embrace a high-end, more luxurious Vietnamese-based menu. And they did, and they have, and they do. You know, and if we're seeing, you know, more of that come about, not just in Houston, but we're seeing it in other cities, that, you know, Haas Snacks, which got that amazing review in the New York Times, you know, I'm all in. I'm all in for that because I love both cuisines. And the idea of bringing, you know, sort of French technique to Vietnamese food and vice versa is to me an exciting thing.
Yeah, you know, I read that same review in the New York Times because you sent it to me, but you know, I don't know that necessarily Anam is kind of playing in that same space. I mean, I think this is a lot of like pretty familiar Vietnamese dishes, but done with kind of better ingredients and a full cocktail program in a nicer dining room. I mean, you know, you mentioned that pork jowl lettuce wrap, that was definitely a highlight. The Wagyu beef with the, you know, the betel leaf Wagyu beef was quite tasty. Even the, you know, the fish sauce chicken wings and, you know, those are like a staple of every, Viet Cajun place, but these were a very good version. They were crispy. They were, you know, appropriately like tangy and pungent and really enjoyable. And then, you know, even the shaking beef, I mean, you know, they're doing it with filet mignon. you know, it's a familiar preparation, but that doesn't make it any less delicious.
No, they're not entirely pushing the envelope here. Like you said, there's very familiar items, and they're playing it pretty safe where that's concerned. You know, the clams with lemongrass were fine. They were fine. The proteins, the big proteins, you know, didn't exactly push me over the edge. I thought, you know, the shaking beef was actually a little bit bland. The grouper we had was just okay. The smaller dishes I enjoyed a lot more. I'll tell you what, the two things that really, besides the pork chow, that really stood out for me, one, the chicken wings. And, you know, I've gone on the record that chicken wings don't excite me, you know, and if you told me I could never have them again, I wouldn't lose, you know, a minute of sleep over it.
And you mocked me for ordering them at the time.
But they were delicious. They were absolutely delicious. And I would order them again. And I'll tell you the other thing, and this really kind of what I thought was a real standout, were their desserts. You know, they did these different moods that weren't just beautiful, and they were. They were just the color patterns. These were, you know, they were done. The execution on them was just wonderful. But their flavor, you know, profiles were distinctive, wonderful textures. You know, I was really impressed with their dessert program.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. We had three different mousse cakes, right? We had a chocolate mousse cake, a mango mousse cake, and I think was the third one matcha. Am I remembering that right?
Pandan.
You're right, pandan. Yes, and very pretty and very delicious. And finding desserts worth ordering at a Vietnamese restaurant of any caliber are somewhat unusual. So that is worth noting. You know, I think you're right. I think the grouper, the clay pot grouper that we had was a little bit overcooked. And, you know, I like the lemongrass clams, but, you know, they didn't like change anything, right? We have a lot of places for kind of Vietnamese style seafood in this town. But, you know, I do think, as you said, sort of the quality of the service and the pretty dining room and the ability to kind of share everything. I think, you know, they're all worth noting. And, you know, I think we're used to, you know, very affordable Vietnamese food in this town. And so, you know, we had like a, you know, like a $250 dinner for four, which didn't feel unreasonable, right? For the amount of food that we ate and the quality of what we ate. And so, you know, I think, you know, I'm not necessarily rushing back to Annam for another meal, but I enjoyed it. And I would go back.
I would go back. I don't feel like a rush to go back either. I could see going there on a date night. I'm intrigued by the soups, but I wasn't like blown out of the water by this, you know. And this, you know, is worth noting that this has landed in that epicenter of ultra high luxury restaurants that we've seen absolutely explode in the Autry Park, West Dallas, you know, right next to kind of River Oaks area. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's right next to Annabelle Brasserie for anyone who's been to Annabelle. There's a Mexican restaurant that's coming to that development. We've had Doko and Bar Doko, the sushi restaurant, the cocktail bar, open up there recently. Sadly, Auden is closing. So, you know, I think Autry Park has taken a little bit of time to find its footing. But it's, you know, this is a good addition to that mix. And I think MF Lobster has done well. So, you know, I'm intrigued by the prospects of Annam, and I look forward to another meal there.
Absolutely.
All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurant of the week. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. I'll see you guys at the Houston Barbecue Festival.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Sue Kinn of Burmalicious.
Love her food.